I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it's 1:32 p.m., 1:33 now on Monday, February 2nd, 2026. Present today are, I think, just about all the members. We have Representative Allard, Representative Hannon, Representative Moore, Representative Bynum, Representative Stapp, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Galvin, Representative Jimmy, two of the co-chairs, Schrage and myself, co-chair Josephson. Also present today are House Finance Committee staff, Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Tolulu Lastufka. We've been joined by the third co-chair, co-chair Foster, Secretary Bree Wiley, and Secretary Leah Frazier. We also have our moderator, Emily Mesh, from the Legislative Information Office. Before we start, please mute your cell phones. In today's meeting, the Department of Administration will give two presentations. The first will be its department budget overview. Then they will provide an update on the 2025 statewide salary study. With us today from the department to present its budget overview is Stephanie Bingham, Director for the Division of Admin Services. Director Bingham, please come forward, put yourself on the record, and begin your presentation.
Good afternoon, members of the House Finance Committee. I am Stephanie Bingham, Admin Services Director for the Department of Administration. Today, I will provide an overview of the Governor's Fiscal Year 2027 budget for our department. Please bear with me. I am new to the department. I've been in this position for 6 months. Our mission is to provide consistent and efficient support services to state agencies so they can better serve Alaskans. Services to the public include legal and advocacy services, Alaska Public Offices Commission, public communication services, and Division of Motor Vehicles. Services to state agencies include Office of Administrative Hearings, Administrative Services, Finance, Personnel, Office of Information Technology, Risk Management, Retirement and Benefits, and Procurement and Property Management. This slide represents the budget trends for FY21 through FY2027. The Department of Administration's proposed FY27 budget totals $350 million, up from $340 million in FY26.
We have a question already, Director, from Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Coach Justin, through the chair. I just want to thank you and welcome you for being here, and we all appreciate you coming here. And even though you're new, we're still excited that you're here, and I think you're going to do a great job in your presentation today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, continuing on. Unrestricted general funds, $99.8 million, up from $96.6 million in FY26. Designated general funds, $36.5 million, up from $35.4 million. Other funds, $212.3 million, up from $207.6 million in FY26. Other funds primarily include interagency receipts and the Office of Information Technology Service Fund. Federal funds, $1.3 million, slightly up by $23,000. Any questions?
Don't see any. So we'll go to slide four.
Slide four. This slide is the FY2027's budget by fund group. This is another perspective of slide three, if there's any questions.
Don't see any. We'll go to slide five.
Slide five represents how funds are allocated across results delivery units. These are appropriations in the budget bill. The department is primarily funded by the other fund group. As mentioned, largely interagency receipts and the Office of Information Technology's Inter Information Services Fund. With Central Administrative Services at $104.8 million, and the Office of Information Technology at $68.2 million, and Risk Management at $35.2 million. As for the unrestricted general funds, across the department, the largest share is in legal and advocacy services, with $85.7 million. and Central Administrative Services with the smallest share at 11.6 million. Shared services is eliminated in the FY 2027 budget. Any questions?
Yes, question from Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Joseph, and thank you, Ms. Bingham, for being here. And no matter what people say about House Finance, we're not as vicious as they might lead us to believe. My question's about shared services, and I had an email inquiry from a state employee. And before I answered them, I wanted to make sure, since you were coming here today and it came in on Friday, they were concerned that these jobs being moved from shared services back to departments, and they said, you know, there's a hiring freeze, so how are these people going to get their jobs? My understanding, and so I'm looking for you to affirm or correct me where I'm wrong, is that people who were, if I was at shared services but doing payroll for DOT, my position goes to DOT. I don't have to apply for it. I'm laterally moving, and the position goes, and that's where it is. It's the same job, just housed back at the instead of at big admin, it's at admin in the State Department that it's been reassigned back to. Is that correct?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Hannon, you are partially correct. So shared services and payroll are separate. Payroll is under the Division of Finance. Shared services is its own division. That will be kind of splitting up. The accounting and travel will move back to the departments. And as you're correct, those positions that are filled will move with filled positions to the department. If they are vacant, they will have, it'll be a collaborative opportunity between the agencies to hire a new candidate.
Okay.
Follow up.
And so right now, no one who has a job in one of those that's going back to departments will be losing their job, but some vacant positions will need to be reevaluated and applied for. They'll be frozen out until the hiring freeze is lifted.
Through the chair. Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Hannon. The hiring freeze should not impact this. We are getting a blanket waiver to still recruit for those positions. There is one position being eliminated, which is the shared services director.
Okay. Thank you very much.
That tells you something. Yeah. All right. Let's go to slide 6.
This slide represents the FY 2026 requests that were not funded. For the Office of Public Advocacy, there were 3 position requests for administrative officer, a paralegal, and an attorney 5. For the Office of Information Technology, it was Microsoft 365, Copilot, AI tools, and the AI projects. And for the Division of Motor Vehicles, it was additional programming capacity with an analyst programmer position. These requests were not re-requested in FY 2027 as the department is prioritizing the most critical needs as the state faces statewide budget constraints. Any questions? Next slide. This slide represents the FY 2026 items and their status. For the Office of Public Advocacy, there's $450,000 of unrestricted general funds and funds over time. Eligibility for the guardian ad litem and public guardian position in the child in need of aid casework. For the Public Defender Agency, it was $1.5 million of statutory designated program receipts for contractual assistance to the municipality of Anchorage for misdemeanor cases. For the Office of Information Technology, there was $529,000 of other funds for the Information Services Fund, funds rising software and contract costs for the increased usage and inflation.
Director Bingham, I have a question about these 2 slides. On slide 6, you identified these as requests made a year ago that we did not fund, and that those were not being re-requested. On slide 7, these are things we did fund, and you're just telling us how the funding is going. Is that right?
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, you are correct.
Okay.
Sorry for that. I should have clarified
clearer. Okay. Any questions about 6 or 7? Let's go to slide 8. Oh, Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Chair Justin. Through the chair to director. Again, thank you for being here. On this other, so I guess two, first on the fund source for the Office of Information Technology, it says other. Can you tell me if that's programmatic receipts or some sort of license fee? First through the chair.
Ms. Bingham.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, to Rep. Stapp, yes, you are correct. That is the Office of Information Technology and your Information Services Fund.
Follow-up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes, follow-up, Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair. So just out of curiosity, and you may not know the answer to this question, so that's totally fine. Regarding licensing and software costs, this paragraph's a little confusing to me. Increased usage and inflation through ongoing contract review, careful service prioritization, and long-term lifecycle planning. All those words sound great. What do those words mean in regards to licensing and software costs? Because I love careful service prioritization and long-term lifecycle planning too, but I don't know what they have to do with the thing through the chair.
Director, if you know. If you don't, you can send us a memo.
Thank you.
But tell us what you know about that.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, Josephson, sorry about that. Representative Stapp, I do believe we have Bill Smith on the line, who is our chief technology officer. He should be available to take any questions.
He is?
Thank you.
Nice handoff. Mr. Smith, State Chief Information Officer, DOA, are you with us?
To the chair, yes, sir, I am. For the record, Bill Smith, Chief Information Officer for the state and Director of the Office of Information Technology. And through the chair, Representative Stapp, what we tried to convey in that statement is in terms of the licensing and software costs, that's being driven not only by inflationary increases to the charge that we have to pay per license in many cases, but also by increased utilization by the departments. There are several licenses that that as more employees use those services, those costs go up, and we're just kind of reacting to the needs within the departments on those. The second part of that statement was just intended to show that a couple of other ways that we're working to manage our overall operational costs.
All right, thanks.
Okay, a question from Representative Hannon for Mr. Smith or Ms. Bingham?
I think it's going to be for Mr. Smith.
Okay, Mr. Smith. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Josephson, Co-Chair Josephson. I'm actually looking on page 6. One of the things we denied last year was to motor vehicles division, but it was to expand its IT capabilities. And I am curious whether, because the Division of Motor Vehicles is one of the places where we actually generate revenue back to the general fund on a on an annual basis, and whether the IT improvements that we are doing in other parts are going to help motor vehicles. Motor vehicles has this listed as it's needing its own IT capabilities, not part of Office of Information Technology and not tied to what you just described as efficiencies that we are finding. So does the Division of Motor Vehicles benefit in any of its technology capabilities or needs by the expansions we are doing in other places?
Mr. Smith.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, thank you for the question. Yes and no. So they do benefit in general for the enterprise services that were referred to within the Office of Information Technology bullet. But this specific request was for a system that is specific to Department or Division of Motor Vehicles and is not enterprise-wide. And those systems are generally managed, resourced, and provided by the divisions or by the departments. So that is not within the OIT service catalog. And so those funds, for any kind of detail around those funds or the impact of that funding or non-funding, I would have to refer you to the Director of Division of Motor Vehicles.
Follow-up, Representative Hannon for Mr. Smith.
Thank you. Actually, I'm going to switch now to Ms. Bingham.
Please.
And do you know... I know that on page 6, those FY26 requests that we did not put in the budget last year are not being resubmitted. Do you know whether that was at the OMB level or whether the Division of Motor Vehicles again requested it and said we can improve our service to Alaska and our efficiency of work and that it's just not been put in the OMB budget that was delivered to us? Do you know if Motor Vehicles did request it?
Ms. Bingham.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, to Rep. Hannon. Just to clarify real quickly, that was not actually for the IT capacity. It was actually for the position to work on the IT capacity. So just to clarify, that was just a position request. To my understanding, they have been able to manage that within the existing work that they have, and it was not re-requested.
Thank you.
I guess I have, and these are tricky questions in a sense, but I guess I have a similar question about OPA and the public defender. If they're not meeting their obligation, and they have a constitutional obligation, I assume, and they need more resources, I assume those would rise rather high. I would hope that OMB would be responsive to that. Do you know, and maybe it's not something you can report to us.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I actually do have, I believe, Director James Stinson on the line and possibly Terrence Haas. I know that Terrence has been out for a court case this week, so he may not be available, but we are working with OMB on their needs and discussing them internally as they come up, but this budget does not represent an increase for them other than their salary adjustments.
I think rather than making it super awkward for Mr. Stinson or Mr. Haas, I'll just leave it alone for now. Let's move on to slide 8.
Okay, through the chair, Representative Josephson, I will continue at slide 8. This is our FY26 enacted management plan by line item. Personal services accounted for the largest share at over $70 million for the legal and advocacy services. The smallest share was the Alaska Public Offices Commission at $1.1 million. Services are significant for the centralized administrative services at $55.5 million, information technology at $37.2 million, and risk management at $34.2 million. The smallest share is the Alaska Public Offices Commission again at $89,600. Commodities and capital outlay remain minimal across the department. The largest share would be the Division of Motor Vehicles at $1.3 million. Our travel is also minimal across the department, with the largest share being for the legal and advocacy services for Office of Public Advocacy and the Public Defender Agency at just over $1 million. Any questions?
Yes, question from Representative Galvin.
Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair. Ms. Bingham, thank you for being here. And my question is related to APOC. I believe that's the only line item where we're seeing fewer funds for next year, and I don't know if that means we are already meeting our mission in terms of being responsive and we just don't need to have any, we're not keeping up with any inflationary costs on this one. So I just thought I would check in to see if there was some thinking behind it or what the department has responded to you, that or that particular commission. If there's a story behind it, I'd like to hear it.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I'm actually going to have to dive into that one a little bit more. From the overview, it looks like a technical adjustment might be needed. It is slightly down, but I will respond in writing.
Representative Allard,
Director. Thank you, through the chair. I don't know if you can answer it. I know you're fairly new, and I appreciate you being here. Is there anywhere in here where we have how many employees are actually with APOC and the amount that we are FYIing them to have for their financial support, how much that goes to their income?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Allard, we can get those details to you and we'll get them back to you with that.
Would you break it down all the way of what they get and where it goes? It might be in one of our books, and then maybe you can just give it to all of us in an email. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
All right. I think we're on to slide 9. recent accomplishments.
Okay. Continuing on with slide 9, our recent accomplishments, which we are very proud of, are our operational improvements and modernization. We maintained retirement and benefits operations during system outages, automated payroll timesheet approvals, eliminating the manual review of 7,500 timesheets per pay period, completed the statewide salary study and implemented the competency-based recruitment, and migrated disaster recovery and Oracle systems to the cloud, reducing recovery time from days to minutes. And we stabilized the indigent defense services and reduced attorney vacancies. Any questions?
I don't see any. Let's go to slide 10.
Slide 10 is a high-level FY27 budget changes department-wide. For here, we have the IT class study implementation. This is $2 million. For salary and Alaska care rate adjustments, it is $7.7 million. For shared services of Alaska, there are 57 positions transferring back to agencies for accounts payable, travel, and expense activities. Transfer of the positions from shared services to Division of Finance are 24 permanent full-time positions and 6 non-perm positions, and the deletion of the director of the shared services due to the reorganization.
I don't see questions. Go to slide 11.
For slide 11, this is a continuation of slide 9, but for division changes and position transfers in more detail. Division of Finance payroll positions moving back to the agencies is 40 permanent full-time positions. Position transfers from Division of Finance to agencies include Department of Corrections, 8, Department of Fish and Game, 6, Department of Law, 1, Department of Military Veteran Affairs, 1, and Department of Natural Resources, 4, Department of Public Safety, 3, and Department of Transportation and Public Facilities will receive 17. Transfer of the Accountant 4-5 to the Office of the Governor, which is 1 permanent full-time position. For the Office of Information Technology, this is a deletion of a long-term vacant position, which is a reduction of $140,000. Public Defender Agency is adding a holistic defense worker funded by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
Okay. Slide 12.
This slide provides a consolidated view of the Department Administration's FY27 proposed budget by division and fund source, showing total allocations and changes from FY26. And it highlights major shifts such as the elimination of shared services and significant increase for finance due to the deconsolidation of shared services and the movement of procurement and print services to the centralized administrative services. Any questions?
I don't see any. Slide 13.
For slide 13, this is our vacancy trends over multiple years. Vacancy rates have varied over time, peaking in some divisions such as finance and IT for IT-related positions and accountant positions. The DMV positions are experiencing high turnover rates in lower range positions such as 10 and 12, but we are prioritizing them.
What does a range 10 earn?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, off the top of my head, I will have to get back to you.
But it sounds like folks who make a range 10 are not happy with it. There's churn, is what you've said.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I would say that those are lower range positions. So when you start out in the state, you're generally moving up. So there is high turnover. Those are our lowest levels of, you know, state workers. And so there is high turnover as people move up within state services, and we reprioritize them for this public.
Okay. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. On that same point, what would a range 10 position at DMV be doing?
Ms. Bingham.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I'm actually going to see if Kathleen Wallace is on the line. She is the Director of Division of Motor Vehicles.
Ms. Wallace.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
This is Kathleen Wallace, the director of the Division of Motor Vehicles.
Thank you. You may have the only director. You may have the only division that we call a department. But go ahead, director. Did you hear Representative Hannon's question?
Yes, through the chair to Representative Hannon. A Range 10 employee at the Division of Motor Vehicles is our frontline staff that helps the customers that come in person, over the phone, through the mail, online services. So they process everything that you would need at a DMV, short of the road scope test. Range 12 is where they start doing road scope tests. But a Range 10 does driver's licenses, commercial driver's licenses, vehicles. Like I said, anything you would go to DMV for, that's what a Range 10 processes.
Follow up.
I guess I'm, co-chair, I'm a little surprised by that, because those are the people that, you know, and we always talk about this, DMV generates money to us, and it's, of course, the stereotype across the country of a place where people hate to interact with. Yet, in general, I've always had a very positive experience going to DMV, dealing with people who are very helpful and able to problem solve very quickly, whether it was getting a permanent ID or I got a temporary handicap license while I had my knee surgery recovery. And the extraordinary aptitude to interact with the public and be problem solvers, I would think we need to keep those people in those jobs. So I would hope we would perhaps look at increasing, and maybe the salary study might have, that might be one of those places where it recommends those people be a higher range, because that's the kind of job that the more you're there, you've encountered that problem again, therefore the next time you can problem solve it faster and do that service delivery to Alaskans rapidly. And I think we always want that. We want our frontline delivery service people to be very good at getting that service done for Alaskans and back out the door, whether it's voter car registration, changing titles. You know, there's a lot of sort of legalese there that the public may be confused by, but we want those DMV employees to be good at that job. So I'd hope we'd find a way to keep them there longer and not have high turnover in that frontline delivery.
Representative Allard.
Thank you. Through the chair, I don't see it. I don't know where I'm at on it as far as, could you tell me how much they make as a Range 10 Step A?
I think I asked.
Oh, you did ask it. Did you say it?
No. Oh, the director of DMV may know. Ms. Wallace, do you know the answer? I apologize.
Oh, yeah.
Through the chair to Representative Alice, I do know the answer to that. A total cost for a Range 10 Step A is $79,820 a year. Their base salary that they take home is $40,599.
May I do a quick follow-up?
Yes. Representative Allard for DMV.
I'm
going to
back up for just a minute. Did you say that a Step 10A makes almost $80,000? Did I miss to come in and process our driver's license and stuff? I'm sorry. Thank God my deaf and hard of hearing bill passed. So I'm having a hard time hearing.
Yes.
She didn't say that.
Through the chair to Representative Allard. Yes, that includes all of their benefits, health insurance, and everything to get to that $79,820.
Okay, can I back off for just a minute? Can I do one more follow-up, please, Chair?
Yes,
thank
please.
You. Can you tell me their actual salary versus their entire benefits? I think that's what I'm looking for, too.
Yes, through the chair. Their base salary minus benefits is $40,599.
Okay, that's a stinger. That's what I wanted to get out there in the open. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, let's go to slide 13. Slide 13. Sorry, Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Jefferson, through the chair. So of those Range 10 that you say there's high turnover, do you know how many just go ahead and move up into a new position? Probably don't have that off the top of your head, but if that's something that you could get to us, that would be interesting to know that we're not just losing them to go work at Pizza Hut. We're they're actually being promoted and moving up to different positions.
Ms. Bean.
Hi, through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski. So that would be a bit of a challenge for us to dive into just because it could be with another agency, and we may not have full visibility statewide on that, but we can look into it and try to provide you more details of what we can provide.
Don't spend too much time on it. Thank you.
Okay, slide 13, vacancies. Did we cover that? Mm-hmm. All right, slide 14.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I'll continue at slide 14. This is our vacancy percentages by the results delivery unit. Our overall vacancy rate for FY26 is about 17%. This data represents full-time positions only as of 12/15/2025. Whereas if we used the combined full-time and non-permanent positions as of January 15th data, the department has 13.1% vacancy rate. Due to the seasonal nature of non-permanent positions, we elect to use the full-time positions when representing our department vacancy rate. Additional questions?
I would think that, for example, risk management, that those are highly skilled and educated folks. Is that right? And is it, what do I take home from that? That there's that sort of disinterest in filling those vacancies.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, you are correct. There are three vacant positions within that division. It is a very small division. It's a division of six, and we are recruiting for all three of those positions at this time. They are skilled in their work, and I believe that we do have the risk management director if you have additional questions.
I don't. Representative Galvin?
Thank you, and I think the answer is probably going to be the same, but I just want to make sure we touch on it. Again, in APOC, where we didn't have any lift in the total amount of funds going to that commission, I'm also seeing 33% there. I assume that this is also a small number, and then just missing a few means a very large percentage, or is there a story behind that as well that's different?
Director Bingham.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, you are correct. They are very small divisions, so when we have, you know, turnover in them, the vacancy rate does spike quickly. We do prioritize those small divisions that only have limited staff.
Thank you.
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Coach Justin, through the chair, again, Director Bingham. I brought this up to the OMB director, but since you're in this role too, it might be mindful. When it comes to the centralization and decentralization of stuff like payroll, the state has been back and forth on doing these things with different services for decades, many times one way or the other. So as we decentralize payroll, I think it would be helpful if perhaps you and maybe the OMB director could work together to leave behind kind of the reasons why we decided to do that. So the next person who comes along and tries to centralize payroll 5 years from now or 2 years from now can know why we did that and why we chose to decentralize again. So thank you.
Through the chair, yes, Representative Stapp, I sat in on that, and I do hear your request, and we'll do our best to make sure that that's documented for you.
Finally, slide 15.
Okay, this once again is our vacancy rate by component. This is just a little bit more of a detail for you. For finance and personnel, they have notable vacancy challenges. And then for recruitment and retention remain our priority across the department. Vacancy rates by division vary from 4.9% to 33.3%.
Director, I actually am going, because we've moved speedily, to take the opportunity to ask Mr. Haas and Mr. Stinson a question. Mr. Haas, are you there?
Yes, Chair. This is Mr. Haas on the line.
I'm going to ask you something, and I just want to lay a little context. Because it's relevant to the corrections budget, the judiciary budget, Department of Law budget. What, in your most succinct fashion, and I confess this may open up a number of questions, You've read the ProPublica stories on trial delay, certainly a budgetary matter in a sense, along with affecting so many other things. How would you solve that if you were king?
Thank you, Chair Josephson, for that small question. I'll get right to it. Okay, so if I'm a benign dictator with unlimited resources and unlimited power, then the answer is partially procedural and outside of my control at the public defender, which is the way cases move through the court system. On my side, it's the two things that we're always talking about. It's having enough lawyers to do the job and them having enough experience to do the job. And I think we're working on that, but all of us would like to do it, I'm sure, a lot faster than it's possible to do. I'm hiring lawyers at a quick pace. They're coming into the agency, but it takes time to get them trained up. So if I had unlimited power and a magical wand, I would have a whole crop of highly experienced lawyers ready to go and handle the most serious cases at a reasonable pace. Given the world I actually live in, what I need is time to get folks trained up. That's what we continue to work on. Thank you, Chair Justice.
Mr. Stinson, same question. What would you do about the trial backlog and the constant waiving of Rule 45 on speedy trial?
Well, thank you, Chair Josephson. For the record, this is James Stinson, the Director of the Office of Public Advocacy. And also, thank you for ensuring that PD Haas was in the hot seat first, because I get to sort of ride on his coattails for this one. I think at the end of the day, when you're dealing with a resource-constrained system, what you're looking at is what is the system's capacity to process cases, how many cases can it process at what speed, and then how many trials can it handle with that capacity. And that's going to be a smaller amount. And so it does come down to how many bodies do you have, how experienced are they, and then also what is the court's capacity? How many judges and courtrooms do you have to handle the trials? And so part of the issue is you have a lot of cases that have been waiting to go to trial for a long time, so they're not going to resolve without a trial. Trials take more resources, trials take more time. When attorneys are in trial, they're not able to resolve other cases and talk to other clients. And so I think everyone is feeling the pinch. I think taking off my imaginary crown, what I can tell you is I'm having good conversations with individuals like Stephanie Bingham and OMB about the agency challenges. I think you all have overall been quite responsive, and I think the governor's office has as well. So I do try to have some gratitude and be thankful for the resources we have been given, because I recognize that you all wear your own crowns and we're in a resource-scarce environment.
Those were succinct. Any questions on that for the PD or OPA? Representative Ballard.
Thank you. And I might have asked you through the chair, I might have asked you in the committee meeting yesterday, but would you be able to break down how many vacancies are in each of these departments?
Through the chair, Rep. Josephson, we do have that coming to you. We have just finished up our memo. It's going through our internal process for finalization, and we will get it over to you.
Just quick follow-up. And that would be, thank you. That would be with their position, their pay, how long it's been vacant, the whole thing.
Through the chair, Representative. Yes, Rep. Ballard, we can try to get you as much detail as we can.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Director, thank you for that. I don't see any other additional questions. We're going to take a brief at ease and let the salary study folks set up. We're at ease at 212. We're back on record in the Al Adams room at 2:14 on the 2nd of February, 2026. Our second presentation today is an update on the 2025 statewide salary study. With us today from the department is Amy DeVaris, Director for the Division of Personnel. Ms. DeVaris has found her way to the table. Please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Good afternoon, House Finance Committee members. My name is Amy DeVaris. I am the Director of the Division of Personnel under the Department of Administration. I thank you for the opportunity to give a status update on the salary study today. I want to mention I am just shy of my three-month anniversary of working in state service, so I hope you'll be patient with me as I navigate the procedures and expectations here today.
Well, you should be more nervous than Director Bing.
I'm sure that's an understatement.
All right. Thank you. Please proceed.
All right. Through the chair. The statewide salary study, the font looks odd, so I'm a little thrown back. The salary study was launched following a legislative appropriation in FY24 of about $1 million. It was a multi-year appropriation to account for the large scope of the project. Primary goals of the project were to increase applicant pools for State of Alaska positions by making the state a more competitive employer, and to identify potential cost savings for job classes where the state is over market in its salary structure. The study conducted by Siegel Company was finalized in January of 2025 and released in April of 2025. The study provides valuable insight into how the State of Alaska base pay compares with market benchmarks. The report highlights the complexities of the state's current classification and pay system, particularly the challenges posed by the broad pay structures that group diverse occupational roles under a single pay plan. The structure limits the state's ability to make across-the-board changes. The Siegel Company's recommendations focus on modernizing the state's classification and pay plans in a manner that is equitable and also agile to changing workforce conditions. Questions through the chair?
Nope. I think we'll go to slide 3.
To move the initiative forward, the Department of Administration issued a request for information, which was open December 18th, 2025, through today, February 2nd, 2026. To gather input from qualified vendors on timelines and costs associated with implementing structural changes to the state's classification and pay plans.
Director, a question from Representative Stapp, and then I have one of my own. Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair, to the director. Okay, so we paid for a study. We got information from the study, and now we are asking for another study to tell us how to implement the last study we paid for. Is that correct, through the chair?
Director DeVaris.
Through the chair, thank you for the question. We did learn a lot from the salary study and the report that we received from that. Because we are looking at the potential for making structural changes to the state's classification system, which will be a very complicated project, we did put out this RFI to receive refined information that would help us to create plans for that, scope the cost, scope different phases potentially for that type of implementation.
Follow-up,
President Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair. when do you expect this follow-on implementation study to be completed and implemented, through the chair?
So, beg your pardon, through the chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Staff. What we will be receiving you know, as the RFI closes today, is information from qualified vendors that will help us create a plan or a strategy for moving forward. So it's not another salary study. It's simply the information that we would need in order to scope a comprehensive project to essentially revamp the state's classification system.
Faultless co-chair.
Follow up, President Staff.
Yeah, sorry, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair. No, I understand that, Director. I'm saying, like, so we requested information based off the study that we funded that took a long time to get out. So now we're saying that this is the implementation, so it's materially different. And that closes February 2nd. So then what happens? So when should we expect a finality to this lengthy process? Is that this year? Is that next year? Is that 15 years from now that we'll be done with our salary study through the chair? Do we have any kind of forest through the trees thing here?
Director DeVers.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Staff, for the question. I understand the reason for asking it. It will take some amount of time to establish a plan, establish anticipated costs of that, work with OMB and the governor's office to determine a timeline forward. There is nothing in the FY27 proposed budget, for example, for this. So I think, you know, we would be looking at it at least a year to develop those plans.
Thank you.
Director, how many iterations of reports were provided by Siegel to the department? And what I mean by that is, I see you've got this publishing date that spans, well, I guess it's a month and a half. Actually, it was a year ago today, but previous, I guess, parts were published. Where I'm going with this is, can you tell us how many times the state went back to Siegel and said, we want you to make an adjustment to your report?
Through the chair, I do not have that information. I've very recently joined the state of Alaska, and I just don't have that information.
Do you know whether there were instances where the state went back to Siegel and said, we need you to change how you've done your report?
Through the chair, since joining the state of Alaska in November, I have been focused on what the salary study report says, and it was, I think, on my second or third day of employment that I drafted the RFI to move this process forward. So I'm picking it up from where it is today. I don't have the information that you're asking for.
I guess my last question, because I know you're new to the division, is, and I'm capable of looking at the report and trying to figure it out, but does the report include anything about geographic differentials?
Through the chair, thank you for the question. No, the report does not. Geographic differentials are a separate compensation element negotiated with the unions, and so those are not included in the salary study.
I guess my last question is, and I think I know the answer, but does the state take a position that its communications with Siegel are proprietary? That if the public is curious about whether the report was swung in one way or another based on what was asked of Siegel, that's knowable by the public?
Through the chair, I apologize. I just okay. Don't have that information.
All right. Representative Galvin, then Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. And this is kind of following along the same lines. As I understand it, there's not to be changes made for 2027, but we're just getting an update now with the deadline of today. So I guess what I'm wondering is, are we going to expect that we may need another update, since now the data will not be fresh? If we're looking at 2028, do you anticipate that the data will be fresh enough that it will be applicable for the following year.
Director DeVaris.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, thank you for the question. What we intend to receive through the request for information is not updated salary specific information about job classes. It's really more in the realm of how might we approach an overhaul to our pay and classification system. So, you know, I would imagine there will be some refining of data as we pursue those changes, but I do not believe the information we have in the 2025 salary study would not be useful. It'll be very useful.
Okay, thank you. And can you share with us what the cost is of these updates that we've been receiving? Is there an additional cost, or is it all inclusive of that first initial fee of $1 million?
Director DeVaris.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Galvin, for the question. This was just a request for information. It was not, there's no cost associated with that.
Okay, thank you. And if I may, one final ask.
Sure, Representative Galvin.
Thank you. Chair. And so, to your knowledge, 3-year-old data on salaries would be appropriate enough to use then for a salary structure change that we may be looking to put in place not until 2028. That's where we are right now.
Director.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Galvin, for the question. Yeah, these are really two different things. The salary study gave us information so that we would understand how our salaries generally compared with market. Those were based on benchmark jobs. And what we are looking at doing now is considering how we might make structural changes to the classification system. I guess the other thing to mention is I have a slide on the IT job class study, which we're getting ready to implement. When we do these things for specific job families or occupational series, we are looking then at more current data.
Thank you.
We're going to go to Representatives Bynum, then Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, and through the chair, thank you for being here. I'm sorry if I messed up, just for the director, for clarification. So you're new here in the department, and I'm sorry, the division, and I missed the part. Are you brand new to the division? Like you've come from outside, or you've been in the division and you've been promoted into this position?
Director.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Bynum, for the question. Apologies. I am brand new to state service. I recently retired from federal service after a 31-year career.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
As a follow-up.
Yes, follow-up, Representative Bynum.
So coming in, we obviously have this salary study that there's been a lot of conversation about, questions from the legislature about when we were going to see this, what are the parameters and the information that actually went into getting the information that we now have. As far as you're aware, was there a strategy or is there a strategy on how we're going to deploy this and be implementing this RFI that went out? I think back to Representative Stapp's question is like he's wanting to just get a, my understanding is get an expectation about what is it that we can see coming forward. I have that same question, and what is that expectation? So instead of trying to pin you down to like a timeline, my question would be ultimately is there an overall strategy? If so, what is that? And if not, are you developing it?
Director.
Through the chair, thank you for the question, Representative Bynum. I think the easy way to say that is being very new to this position and joining the Division of Personnel and the department when I have, you know, this is among a set of very high priority areas of work that I'm undertaking. There will be a very collaborative approach to developing a strategy for pursuing the results of the salary study as would be necessary if we do in fact, you know, take on comprehensive changes to our classification plan, and you know, the pay scales would follow that. So this planning will have to happen in partnership with OMB and the governor's office. This information will have to be reviewed by the legislature. The unions will be involved. It will be quite a comprehensive project.
So, quick follow-up.
Follow-up, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. So, for clarity, what we can expect coming from the division will be an overall goal or strategy that you're laying out, and a vision about where is it that we actually want to go. Is that what I'm hearing? Or let me, I guess I'll clarify. Or is this something that is actually coming from the administration saying that this is kind of our goals and what we want to do, and you've been asked to carry those out? Because I guess those are two very different things.
Director.
Through the chair, thank you again, Representative Bynum, for the question. It's not a question that I've posed myself. I will be taking the lead in reviewing the results of the RFI and coming up with a suite of options potentially for what we might do next. I consider that to be my responsibility.
Thank you very much.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. And Mr. Vries, you may not have known, since you weren't there, that there was a lot of tension and expectation about what the salary study would tell us. I'm looking for a very narrow scope, and that is, if OMB ran calculations on what implementing the benchmark jobs that they evaluated would cost us to implement at both the 50th and 65th percentile, because those were the things in the job. So instead of new data, I am looking to see the salary and wages, because I understand benefits would change based on percentages, but we've never seen what would it cost to implement this at the 50th percentile, at the 65th percentile. So I'd like to know, and I know that you're not going to know off the top of your head, were those calculations done by OMB, and can we have them?
Director.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Hannon. I don't have those numbers in front of me. I think that's something that we'll have to follow up and get back to you on.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. And I guess I would like that and the message be that it's a little bit shocking to me that your commissioner is not with you today, that she sent the lambs to the fire, knowing there were going to be questions about something we spent a lot of time asking about last year. And so you're doing great jobs that you've been sent to do, but we did have sort of an expectation of some specificity that we've spent a year trying to get. And it doesn't bind us to anything, because maybe it's a $1 billion price tag and we know we don't have $1 billion to implement it, but we at least need to know that the calculations that we paid $1 million to have would tell us it would cost this to implement it, knowing that we are unlikely to do it all at once. So I'd like your commissioner to bring us that information.
Director, we appreciate you being here very much. There's been some concern that commissioners won't make themselves available. I haven't found that to be true until today. So I'm not a huge critic on this point, but I take Representative Hannon's point. Representative Vallard.
Thank you. And I'm going to, through the chair, do a quick follow-up to Representative Hannon's comments. I appreciate both of you guys being here. And combined, I guess you have the time it takes for a baby to be born. Coming to federal service, which I came from before too, to state is very different, and especially testifying in front of us. I, too, am concerned, and I'm just going to ask you a question, and hopefully the chair will just let me ask this question. Is your commissioner, maybe you know, in Juneau, or do we know why the commissioner didn't show up?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Allard, I do not believe the commissioner is in town today. I'm not sure when her plans are for coming. I believe she's coming this week. The reason she asked me to be here today is I think we all interpreted this as being a short update and anticipating that we would be called to talk in more detail once we had the time to evaluate the results of the RFI. So I think we assumed this would be more of a quick update.
Thank you, and I'm just going to make a comment on record that generally when we have these briefs, the commissioners are here. Thank you.
Okay. Let's go to slide 4.
All right. Okay. While the broader effort to advance on the statewide salary study is underway, the state is implementing its completed IT job class study. The IT study was initiated in 2020, and the implementation is the culmination of a multi-year effort to modernize the structure of state government IT job classes. Modernized IT job classes will support recruitment, retention, and career progression for IT professionals by aligning job architecture with current workforce needs. The implementation is underway, with the first phase rollout scheduled for April 13, 2026. The modernization impacts over 600 positions through all 15 state agencies. In addition to the IT job class modernization, we have 9 job class studies actively underway at the request of state agencies to address recruitment and retention issues that they have identified. The state is also continuing to advance on AO 343 to modernize our hiring practices by redefining the minimum qualifications for over 350 job classes. This means using competency-based standards rather than, for example, just college degrees to reduce barriers to candidates for entering state service. We now have 10 agencies participating in this effort, and it's aimed at strengthening recruitment for the state's workforce. Questions?
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. I appreciate this report. I think initially you said there were 600 positions and 15 agencies, and then at the end you said you now have 10 who are participating, and I just wondered what that difference is or if there's some explanation around that.
Director.
Through the chair, yeah, thank you, Representative Galvin, for the question. These are two different things that we have on this slide discussing
okay.
how we're making improvements to the system. So, indeed, there are over 600 IT job classes that mm-hmm. are being impacted by the implementation of the study.
Mm-hmm.
And then our work to advance AO 343 is about the competency-based minimum qualifications for jobs, which is broader. That touches on now 10 agencies.
Only on 10. Okay, thank you.
Director, is there a way simply to explain the IT job class study, these other 9 sort of a la carte studies, are these, one is complete, 9 are pending. Are these are they moving at a different schedule than the large Siegel schedule or study, which is awaiting implementation because of special urgency or... How did that evolve? Were they're getting treated differently than the big study?
Yes, Chair. Thank you for the question. So there, we have staff in our classification program that receive requests from agencies to do job class studies. for reasons of slow recruitment or high turnover or, you know, something like that. And so that is something that is part of just the maintenance of the state's classification plan, which the Division of Personnel, the personnel director, is statutorily responsible for doing. The Siegel study, the statewide salary study, was something done at an entirely different scale to do, you know, this benchmarking exercise to help the state to understand how we might make improvements to the overall system. So we're really looking at two very different things
here. But do I interpret the IT study to mean this is just urgent, we need these people, we've got to pay them more, we're going to do it right now? Is that how I should interpret that?
Yes, Chair. Thank you for the question. This is admittedly well before my tenure with the state or any active knowledge I have about how this came about. But my understanding, as we've talked about it, is that it became a well-known issue to update the state's IT job classes because they were very much out of date, positions that were described to represent work that is not currently being done anymore and is making it very difficult to recruit and retain IT professionals in the state today. So that was a much bigger study than we typically do. We'll typically do a study of, say 5 or 10 positions. Obviously, this is an order of magnitude larger than that, involving over 600 positions.
We're going to go to Representative Hannon, then Co-Chair Schrage. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, and I guess I'll just do my little teacher bit for a second. So my understanding is the salary study is just taking the job and saying, how does nurse one compare to nurse one in other places? But the classification study is you've got a nurse who's doing medications and complex intravenous activities, etc. So is that really a nurse one or is that a nurse four? Now, with IT, we've completed that, and that my understanding is also that IT study started long before the salary study. That's why it's ready for implementation, and it's taking a job and saying, really, your skills that we had you at level one, you're really doing a level three job. Could you tell us what the other 9 job classification studies that are actively underway are? Are they all in one area? Are they all biologists or accountants or one of each?
Director, I had the same question, so we're certainly eager to know that.
All right. Yes, through the chair, thank you, Representative Hannon, for the question. I don't have my reading glasses on me, but I do actually have the list of studies that are underway. So there's a park ranger study. There's a study on Alaska State Commission for Human Rights, so ASHER. There's community care licensing specialists, vocational rehabilitation, public assistance field services study, forest and fire management, emergency services dispatcher, and emergency service supervisor. And then we've just added forensic scientists and a forensic lab manager. So as you can see, those are very specific job classes across multiple departments.
Thank you.
All right, Co-Chair Schrage.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, and through the chair. I'm trying to just wrap my head around all this. Is there any reason that you couldn't implement the salary study without the classification study to go hand in hand with it?
Director.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Schrage, for the question. The scope of the salary study, was to provide data on how State of Alaska base pay, compares to the external market. The report was really never intended to prescribe pay adjustments to certain job classes. They used benchmarks to help inform, where the state was broadly at. But really the reason we did the RFI is to get down to a more specific level of implementation planning in order to determine the next steps.
Okay, thank you. Follow-up.
Follow-up.
Through the chair, so it was never the intent to actually be able to implement the salary adjustments based on the salary study. You always knew that you would need a classification study as well to go with that.
Director.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Shragi, for the question. I can't speak to what may have been intended at the time. That definitely predates me. But coming into this position and seeing what the results of the salary study are, I believe it's necessary to take an additional step to create a strategy, as someone phrased it, or a plan for how we may move forward with the state's classification plan.
Okay, follow-up.
Follow-up. Co-Chair Shragi.
Thank you for that. Presents some of the challenges in having very green directors. No offense to you all. We're very glad that you stepped into state service, but it makes implementing any of this and understanding the facts very challenging. I guess my concern is, we've paid $1 million for a salary study that now is dependent on a classification study, which is going to take, I think from what we've heard today, at least a year. And we're going to hand this off to who, while vacancy rates are out of control. And so we have I'm just opining here now, not asking a question, but we have a hollowed out government where we all recognize that salaries are uncompetitive and we don't have a cost estimate on what that would take to address, and we can't address any of it until we have a new governor, because none of this will be done until this current administration is out of office. And it just is very challenging for me, at least, sitting at the finance table, to understand how we address these challenges when it seems like everything is set up to be delayed until we have a new administration. If you want to comment on any of that, you're welcome to, but I see we have another member with a hand up.
If you wish. If not...
Through the chair, I think all I'll say is that we're not talking about doing another study. I mean, the department believes that the best path forward is to consider making structural changes to our classification system, because it is extremely complex. And it will, if we're able to do that, it will be much easier to deal with these things in the future. It doesn't mean that we are not addressing some of these issues as they come to us, and that's why we have, job class studies actively underway to handle, those areas where we know we have a recruitment problem or a high turnover problem, or where the responsibilities are just out of alignment with reality.
Representative Stapp, then Galvin.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair, to the directors. So I'm going to end this with a question, but I've always wondered what the word Byzantine bureaucracy meant, and I feel like after today I kind of know that. This issue has been going on a long time. I don't think in all the meetings that we had on the salary study it was ever mentioned that we would ever have required a classification study. So I do feel like this is basically being stuck in a bureaucratic malaise that is slowly grinding my soul into powder. But my question regarding what we can do here is, I know you get a lot of experience at the federal level. Is there any way in your, I know it's short time as director, but going forward, do you have any suggestions how, in dealing with the Department of Administration, which you're now director of, that we can perhaps maybe not have such a bureaucratic system that doesn't produce the kind of desired results until much later down the road, through the chair?
Director, please respond as best you can.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Stapp, for the question. This is precisely why I'm here. The salary study was one of the questions that was brought to me in my job interview, and I did a bit of research to understand, what had been happening, what the state system looked like, what changes, were being considered. I'm very excited about this. I do think there are some improvements we can make, and the RFI closes today. I can't wait to see what's in it, and it will be very gratifying to work on this project. It is one of the reasons why I took this job.
You made me feel a lot better already. Thank you, Director.
Representative Galvin, then Bynum.
Thank you, through the chair, Josephson. I appreciate again you're taking all of these questions and doing your best to explain to us where we are with all of this. I have a couple of questions. Firstly, can we put on record how much the classification study, this particular one, the IT one, it costs to put together?
Director, other director.
Hi. Through the chair, Representative Josephson to Rep. Galvin. I believe the entire budget is laid out for you. Just for DOA, that's $7 million. I actually need my binder. I believe it's $2 million.
And that comment is from Director Bingham.
Yes. And just to clarify, ours is just a portion of that. So OMB actually elected to implement it across all agencies. The IT classification for DOA is $2 million, and we'd have to get back to you with information from OMB on the effects for the entire state.
Thank you. I believe it was much more than that, but I really do appreciate you sharing that it was at least $2 million, but I think my recollection was around $9 million, and I just want to put that on record because we're hanging on this information, and we're hanging on high vacancy rates in some spaces, and I know you appreciate that. And similar to what I experienced a few years ago when we were going over our frustration around not being able to get SNAP checks out. So we were all dealing with, well, how can we help you? We were all trying to help our state deliver these services better, and we knew that one of the big holes was vacancy rate in the Department of Health in this case. And so we were trying to articulate how we could help. What we got back was we need a new computer system at $59 million, which we delivered. Gosh, we're kind of hung up on all these salary study pieces. But we fired, they had taken out 100 workers a year or two prior. So they knew they had an even bigger hole, still had these long, long wait lists, which we still have. And just, I was frustrated because I just got to thinking, gosh, if we just put that money into paying more, and I do understand that you want to be able to be more accurate around all of this, but my not being able to be a pass-through for federal money so that Alaskans can eat was really frustrating. And these services that IT is doing is also really important. So I do appreciate that we have a conundrum. I appreciate what we heard from Representative Stapp, that it feels like the bureaucracy is almost creating a death spiral, if you will, of being able to get to solutions. I don't understand why we're waiting. We wait until November for an RFI. Why not June so that we can actually implement it in the budget? To me, that makes sense. If we could help work together in partnership, I think that would perhaps be the most obvious way toward getting us to a solution quickly. And I know that I speak for all of us. We're ready to support, but we need to be moving these wheels a little bit faster, and people are suffering for it. We're not delivering as much as we should be as quickly to Alaskans who are expecting it of us. So putting it out there that I encourage us to think about the timing, especially of what we're doing. And if you have any comments on that, I would really appreciate hearing that. And I'm now reading that the IT class study implementation was $7.66 million. So happy to have that on the record again, because I want us to have a scope of how much we've invested in this, and yet we're not able to get something done.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair
Joseph, and just for clarity, you said the study was 7.7 million?
7.66.
7.66 million to do the study?
Let's let Director Bingham comment.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, to Rep. Bynum. That's the implementation cost of the IT classification study across all agencies. Okay. Our department is receiving $2.2 million of that. And just to clarify one thing on record, when we talk about the salary study, as Amy mentioned, the job classification study is not something that we're doing to pick apart the salary study. That is a routine maintenance item that we do all the time continually where there are areas of service needed. Those were before the salary study. The IT job class study has been suffering for years, and this has been going before the salary study was completed. That's a higher level overview of how we compare state to state nationally for our job markets. The job class study is looking at very specific areas of work that we need to continually to have a way to elevate those job classes to the Division of Personnel so that they can look at the recruitment intention issues and work at one specific area at a time. That's routine maintenance, and we are not doing a job class study for the salary study in conjunction. They are separate bodies. One's routine work.
I appreciate it. Co-chair, I just misunderstood what the comment was. I was just really surprised by that number. It makes a lot more sense now that that's full implementation. I was thinking I might be in the wrong line of business if that was the case. So, but my question, co-chair, if I might ask it.
Representative Bynum.
I'm new to this job as well. You know, I've been in this job for now just over a year, and I came in here, and we know that there's tremendous challenges that we face in the state. And I know that your department, your division, isn't going to be able to solve all of those problems. But you are providing some good information to us today. One of the things that we've heard, that I heard last year, was that we have real challenges with these vacancies that we have all throughout the state agencies. And those vacancies are impeding our ability to execute, to do the things that Alaskans are asking us to do. And they told me when I came in here, I have two jobs. Number one is to care for those statutes that are right there. And we make laws to update those and repeal those. Number two, appropriate money so that the state can execute and provide services to the citizens. And then we sit here and we hear about vacancies, and we hear about the inability to execute. And I could probably point out department after department that we are lacking and failing to execute. I'm not going to do that, but we can do that. We hear about this in the media. We hear about this in our finance committees. And one of the major problems that we were being told was that we are unable to execute because we don't have the personnel necessary. And the reason we don't have the personnel necessary is because we are failing to compensate and attract those people. And so we have this statewide salary report in front of us that we waited for a very long time to get. I heard about it when I first got here, and we waited and waited. So my question is this. Are we executing anything that's in here, or are we waiting? And that may not be something that you can fully answer for the all of our divisions and departments, but I'm very frustrated because I have Alaskans back home that are not getting the services that we are putting money forward to get. So if personnel is the problem on execution or part of the problem, and pay is why we don't have them, has this been implemented? That's my question.
Director DeVeris.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Bynum. I'm not sure how to address that question, frankly. There was a lot to that. I think that, you know, from my perspective, we're looking at how to develop a plan to implement the results of the salary study. It's going to be a complex project, and it's going to take a bit of time to to work through all of that. We do have other mechanisms for addressing at the job classes, as we've discussed, where we do have retention or recruitment challenges. Part of that was implementing the competency-based standards to make it easier for people to apply. I mean, there can be a lot of reasons why we have vacancies in certain areas. Sometimes it's the compensation, sometimes it's the work itself. Sometimes it is barriers to recruitment. So we're approaching this from a number of different perspectives. That's probably the best I can say at this time with what I know.
And Co-Chair Josephson,
yes.
I really appreciate that. And I understand, you're just walking into this 3 months in, and I wish, we could hold the divisions and the departments to what I'm asking, and you're coming in trying to solve the problem. So I really appreciate that. Co-Chair Josephson, the frustration that I have is that we will have divisions and departments come here, and they will tell us that they're under executing because they don't have the personnel, and they don't have the personnel because they don't have competitive wages. We heard that from auditors last year, and that we're asking about auditing, and they're way behind, or they're not able to do it because they are not competitive in the market to bring them in here. And I'm almost certain that when we ask that question again this year, we will be given the same exact answer. And so we got a real challenge, Co-Chair Josephson. On how we get beyond that, because we are not delivering the services that we need to be delivering to Alaskans.
Thank you for that comment. You're seeing from my hymn sheet. Let's go to slide 5.
Thank you. This is the final slide, just discussing next steps. As I think I've probably already hit all of these points, but just to summarize, the Division of Personnel will assess the results of the RFI, which we will receive shortly. It closes today, to determine the viability of a large-scale project to update the state's classification plan. The state will continue to prioritize job class studies to meet the immediate maintenance needs for the current classification plan while we determine whether the state can undertake larger scale updates, and then finally, the state will build longer-term implementation plans accordingly with the benefit of the RFI.
Director Deveris, we're almost at the end of our hearing. This second bullet is puzzling to me because the three words, immediate maintenance needs, it sounds like IT positions. That's how I read that. But this sentence comes down to, do we have the will to fund increases? I mean, that's sort of how I read that. By whether large-scale updates are viable. What would determine viability in that bullet? Director.
Thank you, Chair. What we're referring to there is that the state is statutorily required to maintain internal alignment under the State Personnel Act, which establishes that the pay plans will provide fair and reasonable compensation, principle of like pay for like work. And so when we talk about prioritizing immediate maintenance needs for the current classification plan, that is when we are receiving requests for salary studies because agencies feel something is out of alignment. And so we're taking those and moving those forward. The statewide salary study was an entirely different scale and different approach to looking at the entire system. So, I mean, this is not speaking to funding necessarily. It's really speaking more to the scale of the project of updating the entire classification system or significant portions of it, or taking on more sort of occupational studies versus the way we're doing it now, which is with individual job classes.
Okay, let me do just a little bit of housekeeping. if these notes are correct, you mentioned of the 9 job classes on slide 4, one of them I wrote down was forensic scientists. There's some type of worker named a forensic lab technician. Those salaries were, studies apparently were completed 2 years ago, and they received range increases. So I don't know, it could be that there's a difference between a forensic lab technician and a scientist, but I'm just giving that to you to think about. Also, I'm told that these 9 classes used to be published publicly with spreadsheets, and now they require a login to view. I have no knowledge of that one way or the other, but that's another thing for you to think about and see if there's some accuracy to that. You might want to remedy that if that's allowed. I know this hasn't been easy, Director. The sensitivity was well expressed by Representative Bynum. The concern is with inflation, out-migration, churn, all of those things. We think that the state is a great place to come work. We have incredible staff here, the best. But it used to be even more competitive to get a staff job here in Juneau, and that was well known. Many of us think that the defined benefit route under House Bill 78 will help remedy a lot of this. I don't have any other final comments. Anything for the good of the order? Right. I don't see anything. I want to thank you, directors, for presenting today. This concludes our business for this day. Our next House Finance Committee meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, February 3, 2026, at 1:30. At that meeting, the Department of Administration will return to give a presentation on the funding status of the apropos public employees retirement system and teachers retirement system. With that, we'll adjourn this meeting at 3:05 on Monday the 2nd.